farmers markets are starting back up for the season. Some produce you might see as you walk around, turnips, radishes, greens. Maybe you've got those veggies grown in your own garden. Our next guest tells us how to make the best of spring's bounty. And you can join our conversation here at 800-642-1234. Are you excited to get back to your local farmers market? What produce is your favorite? What are you looking forward to? What questions do you have about cooking with rhubarb? 800-642-1234. You can always post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. With us now is Ian Knauer, chef, writer, and farmer. He's the author of a cookbook called The Farm, Rustic Recipes for a Year of Incredible Food. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Hi, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I'm so glad you could join us. Now, I just have to ask, because we are having the slowest spring here in Wisconsin, except for this week, which has been crazy hot.
Yeah.
What's the spring been like for you so far?
I'm here in eastern Pennsylvania. It's been pretty much the same. We had cold weather, cold nights, so we couldn't get anything in the field. And then all of a sudden, it was like 80 degrees this week. It's been a little wonky. But you know, we're headed to summer eventually.
Yeah. So a lot of the traditional spring produce that you might expect to see at your first farmers markets feels like it's a little behind.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, the stuff that we have a farmers market tomorrow and the stuff that we're going to be bringing has been grown in high tunnels and greenhouses, just to make sure that we have stuff for the start of the market for this season.
Yeah. So what makes you most excited for spring? What comes to mind? What is it?
As far as food goes?
Yeah, pick a favorite.
Oh man. I mean, I love spring veggies because they've just been so, it's just been such a long winter, you know? And so we eat what we grow, and we have a lot of storage crops, but that basically means that we're eating beets and potatoes and turnips from like November until now. So like anything that pops up in the spring, I get excited about. One of my favorite things, and it's an early riser, is watercress. Yeah. I love watercress that grows in a stream. It tastes totally different than stuff that you can grow even hydroponically, which never made any sense to me. I don't know why that's the case, but it's so true. You know, wild watercress is just like the sharpest bite. It wakes you up, it gets you ready for the season. I love it raw, but I also love to cook with it. In fact, it makes one of my favorite sort of like creamed spinach dishes. I like to use watercress instead of spinach. I thicken it with a potato. So I boil a potato and then I add the watercress to the pot at the very last minute, drain everything, and then puree it with a little heavy cream. So it's super simple and it's got so much more flavor than creamed spinach. So it's a really great side for a steak or a grilled piece of chicken.
That sounds great. So how do you recommend folks find it if they don't happen to live in a place where they've got a stream next door?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so I've actually been experimenting planting it. So you can order watercress seed from any seed company, and they're little tiny, teeny, tiny seeds. And I found a stream near our house, and I went and I tried sowing the seed in the stream, and it didn't work because we got a heavy rain and it all got washed away. So what I did this year, which has been successful, is I started the watercress seed in flats in our greenhouse, and I just kept it really soaked until it had established a little bit of a root system, and then I transplanted it into the stream. And it totally took. It's thriving. And so probably by next season, I'll be able to harvest enough to eat. So that's been a fun experiment.
And I got to ask about asparagus. You have it yet?
Yeah, we do. We're about halfway through our asparagus season. What do you want to know about asparagus? Asparagus is one of my favorite things.
I wanted to know how you cook it, because I feel like people have very strong feelings about this. What is your favorite way?
All right. So if you go to France and it's asparagus season, you go to a fancy restaurant, you can order a side of asparagus and it costs like 30 euros and it's worth every penny. Because here's what they do. They go outside, they cut it, and they cook it, and then they serve it. the longer the asparagus is, sits between the harvest and the plate, the less flavor it has, the less texture it has. And so it's one of those things, like if you have an opportunity to cut it, or you live near a farm that grows asparagus, ask them when they're going to harvest it and then show up that day. So here's what I do. Here's my favorite way to cook asparagus. I like to peel, it's old school, but I like to peel the bottom end of the asparagus with a vegetable peeler.
Okay.
And then I put the asparagus in a skillet of room temperature water, and I add some salt to that. And when I'm ready to cook it, I turn on the heat and everything comes up together. The water and the asparagus come up in temperature together. What the reason is, because then you get a really even cook. If you drop your asparagus into boiling water, what you get is sort of mush on the outside and not quite cooked on the inside. And yep. Sometimes the tip starts to fall apart because the tip is a little more tender. But if you bring everything up together, then you get this totally even cook. It, depending on the thickness of the asparagus, it's going to take between 4 minutes and 7 minutes. And then I like to take it out just a minute before it's totally tender, because it keeps cooking. If I'm going to serve it hot. If I'm going to serve it cold, which I also love, I will take it out exactly when I'm happy with the texture, and then I'll throw it into some ice water to stop it from cooking. So that's my favorite way to cook it, because you have so much control over it, and you really... Oh, let's talk about that peeling again. The reason I like it peeled is because the bottom end is always thicker, right? Yeah. And so if you take the skin off the bottom end, then the top end and the bottom end cook at the same time. So you don't get mush on top and hard on bottom. You get totally even cooking.
I gotcha. And then what do you put on your asparagus, if anything?
One of my favorite things is a mustard vinaigrette with some capers in it, some olive oil, some lemon juice, or you could use a tarragon infused vinegar would be nice. And then the finishing touch is I take a hard boiled egg and I force it through a mesh sieve so that it becomes what's called a mimosa. And it's sort of is confetti over top of the whole dish.
Nice. We got a comment from a listener. James wrote to us on Facebook, and James says he loves creamed asparagus on toast with some pink Himalayan sea salt or Himalayan salt, black pepper, and topped with some Parmigiano Reggiano. It's
that
a real treat.
Delicious. Yeah, I mean, creamed any vegetable is right up my alley. And I also like how simple it is, because it's a good asparagus, you don't have to do that much. So it sounds like James adds a little cream, a little salt and pepper, and of course the Parmesan, and that's where you need to stop, right?
Yep.
So don't mess it up.
And can you taste the difference between foraged asparagus versus actually planted asparagus?
I don't know that I've ever eaten foraged asparagus. I've seen it on the side of the road in some places, but I never stopped to pick it because I always figured it was somebody else's.
fair enough. But that's definitely a big thing here.
Yeah, I would imagine that there would be a difference. I mean, anytime you have something wild versus something that's cultivated, you definitely get a difference in flavor. So I would imagine that there would be a difference.
And cutting versus snapping, do you have strong feelings?
I usually cut to harvest and then I snap.
Oh.
Yeah, because each spear has its own breaking point, so they're all sort of unique in that way.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about radishes, because sure. I saw your recipe and it's something I had never considered, making a soup out of radishes.
And that soup is actually a cold soup, which is nice for weeks like this one when you have 80 degree days out of nowhere. And all you have are radishes because they're the first thing that pops up in the garden or on the farm. That soup's really fun because it uses buttermilk as its base. And so you get sort of the tang and the creaminess of the buttermilk. And it really helps balance the bite of the radish, because the radishes in that recipe are raw.
Yeah.
And so everything gets blended together, and you get this really sort of refreshing cold soup. It's a really fun recipe. I make it every year.
And what do you recommend if buttermilk isn't a thing that people have in their kitchens? If they don't have it handy, what's your favorite trick?
So my favorite trick to fake buttermilk is to take, let's say, a quart of milk, because usually people have milk in their fridge. and a couple tablespoons of lemon juice, and mix that together. Just keep it cold. You don't have to heat it up. But if you mix together the lemon juice and the milk, what it does is the acid of the lemon juice actually starts to very slightly curdle the milk. So you get that sort of viscosity that you get with lemon juice, and you also get the tang. So that's an easy fake to make buttermilk if you don't have it in your fridge.
Yes, I love it. We're speaking with Ian Knauer, chef, writer, and farmer. He's the author of The Farm, Rustic Recipes for a Year of Incredible Food. And he's with us today to share some tips and recipes on spring produce. We'd love to hear from you. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Have you ever tried your hand at foraging? How's the mushrooms coming? We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can always post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue this conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz in for Rob Ferret. Right now, we're speaking with Ian Knauer. He's a chef and an author, and he's telling us the best ways to prepare spring produce. So, Ian, I'm so curious about mushrooms and what you find where you are.
Sure. We have a lot of mushrooms here. Pennsylvania is a woodsy, damp place, and that's what they like.
Yeah.
This time of year, of course, we have the noble morel, which is one of my favorite mushrooms, yes. Not only to cook with, but to try and find.
Tap the fun.
They're sneaky little buggers. They hide really well because they're brown, just like the leaves. And so you really have to like adjust your eyes to try and find them. You know, it's even sort of like baked into the language. You forage for mushrooms, you hunt for morels. And so like, right. there's so much more difficult and therefore so much more rewarding when you find some. And when it comes to cooking them, I like to keep it as simple as possible. Morels have just a beautiful, woodsy, earthy flavor. And so all I do is I saute them in a little butter, and then I sprinkle them with a little salt, and that's it. And depending on how many I find, I'll either toss them with pasta, or I have actually been out for hours and only found one. And so I'll come back and just saute it and put it on a little piece of toast and just eat that one mushroom.
Savor it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we had a listener that called in. Keith from Green Bay was wondering if the hot weather will hurt the morel season this year. What do you think?
Well, they had a long run of cooler weather, which is obviously what they like. And so they had an opportunity to get really established. The last week or so, since it's been getting warm, they're just going to kind of like bolt like cilantro does. And yeah. They'll just exponentially increase in size. So if you're going to go out, it's probably a good time to go out now, because then they turn into little Christmas trees at some point. Not that you can't eat them then, but they're just a little unwieldy.
Yeah. Well, I want to go to the phones now, where we have Kathy joining us from Presque Isle. Hi, Kathy. What's on your mind?
Hi. Say, I have access to a lot of wild ramps. And I know that they can be used like an onion or garlic almost, yeah. But I'm wondering if your guest has a favorite recipe or two that he likes to use ramps.
I bet he does.
Hi, Kathy. Ramps are my favorite onion. I absolutely love them. I love them raw. I love them cooked. I love them in soup. Let's see. Okay. So let's just start with pizza. So if you're going to put ramps on your pizza, which I highly recommend, make a bechamel. So cook a tablespoon of butter in a tablespoon of flour, and then add a cup of milk. Bring that to a boil with a pinch of salt until it's thickened. That takes about 8 minutes. Use that as your sauce. So then you spread out your pizza dough. You spread your bechamel over that. And then you take the bottoms of the ramp. So like the bulb and the white or pink part, chop that up and sprinkle it on. Bake your pizza. And when it comes out of the oven, lay the leaves, the green part, on it, and they'll just sort of wilt as on the hot pizza. They don't need a whole lot of cooking because you want to preserve that sort of like really deep woods flavor that they have. So that's one example. Another thing to do is ramps and nettle, stinging nettle, pop up at the same time. So if you find some ramps and some nettle, cook an onion in some butter, and we're going to make a soup. Cook an onion in some butter, and then add some chicken stock. bring that to a boil and throw your nettle tops and your ramps in there for like a minute, puree everything, add a little bit of cream if you want to, and then that is the like maybe the most delicious spring soup you can have. It also cures everything. So if you have a cold and you make that soup, like it'll be gone. So those are two examples. Basically anything with ramps makes me really happy. Another quick tip on ramps. I could talk about ramps for hours.
Do you ever pickle them?
Oh yeah, totally. They're really nice with a quick pickle.
Yeah.
So equal parts vinegar and water and a little salt and a little sugar. Heat that up so you dissolve the salt and the sugar and then pour those right over the ramp bulbs. The leaves don't pickle as well, but the bulbs pickle really well. There used to be a bar that I used to go to when I visited friends in New York, and they would serve a martini with a pickled ramp bulb, which was really very classy.
Nice.
So that's a fun thing to do too.
Yeah. What
ramps
was your tip?
Transplantable. So if you find ramps at the farmer's market or in the woods and you use them, you can always replant the stem. So if it has roots on it, throw those in the ground, cover it up. They sort of like a rocky hillside, if you can find that, and check again next year, and they will have popped up if they like the conditions that you put them in. So that's a really fun way to, you know, if you live near woods, spread the ramp population so that we can keep enjoying them.
Nice. Well, I want to ask you about fava beans, because you have a very cool recipe for fava beans, and I feel like these are underappreciated. I don't feel like they're very widely known or used.
Yeah, outside of Italy, you don't see them a lot. Italy and California, I guess.
Yeah, but they're delicious.
They're so good. Oh, my God, they're so good. And the coolest thing about fava beans is that you can eat the entire plant. So fava beans grow, and you can eat their leaves. You can saute their leaves with a little butter, throw in a dash of soy sauce at the end, and it's just like, it's so delicious. You can also eat, of course, you can eat the bean, right?
Yep.
You can eat the skin that's around the bean. And then, a lot of people don't know this, you can eat the pod. And so fava beans come in this like 6 to 8 inch sort of like spongy pod. And most people just throw that out. They peel the bean, then they blanch the bean, and they just serve the bean. But those pods are really fun in like a tempura batter fry. And so make a little tempura batter with some, like a loose batter with either, you can use beer as your liquid or seltzer water. Dip your fava pod in there and then deep fry it. And it will become super crunchy and super soft on the inside. And I just like, fry them and dip them in mayonnaise or ketchup and just eat them like French fries. So it's a really fun plant. I grow them here. It's the first thing I plant in the spring. I plant them mid-March because they're frost tolerant and they do not like the heat. So mine grew about 8 inches this week because of the heat. So I'm hoping it cools down a little bit.
So like you would peas.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. And where do you recommend folks find them if they're looking for some, looking to try some?
I would think a high-end grocery store that has a good produce section would carry them this time of year. You can always find a good grocery store and ask the produce manager. If they get enough requests for them, they can order them in.
Yeah. Well, and I would be remiss if I did not ask you for your favorite recipe for rhubarb.
Rhubarb favorite recipe. That's tough.
Well, I hear that you have a good one for drinking it.
So I love a rhubarb Collins. You make a simple syrup, so equal parts sugar and water, and then blanch a couple stalks of rhubarb in that simple syrup. Blend it and strain it. And then what you have, of course, is you have a rhubarb simple syrup. And with that, you can add some lemon juice, a little gin, top it off with some soda water, serve it on the rocks. It's such a refreshing and also beautiful little cocktail. I mean, you don't have to put the gin in it, but, you should.
Why not?
it's such a pretty color that it feels really classy just because of the color. You know, that the red of the rhubarb translates into this, like, really pretty pink in that cocktail.
And it's got vitamin C, right?
Sure. Yeah, it's a healthy one. Why not?
Well, Ian, what spring vegetable do you think is often underrated or overlooked?
Oh, dandelion.
Really?
Because it's everywhere,
Yeah.
first of all, and it's delicious in lots of different forms. I do two main things with the dandelion that I find. I take the greens and I make a hot dressing. So I cook some bacon and I save the bacon fat. And then I whisk together an egg and some water and a little vinegar and a little sugar. And then I cook that in very slowly in the bacon fat until it congeals and gets a little thick. And then I toss that hot dressing with the dandelion, and it just ever so slightly wilts the dandelion, and the sweetness and the richness of the dressing help balance the bitterness. This was actually my grandmother's recipe. And then, of course, you take the bacon that you cooked and you sprinkle it over top. The other thing that I like to do with them is I like to make capers. So you're familiar with capers, of course,
Yep.
the Italian little flower bud that's brined and pickled. Just before the dandelions pop up, I go outside and I pick the buds. It takes forever because they're so tiny. And then I take them home, wash them, and I put them in a salt brine for about a week. They lacto ferment. That means that they start to get a little sour and they absorb some of that salt. And they themselves are very bitter. And so you're starting to see
Yeah.
some balance there. Then I take them out of that brine and I put them in a vinegar mixture and I just keep them in my fridge and use them just like capers.
Oh,
Anytime the
thank
week.
you, Ian.
Yeah.
We are out of time. I could talk with you all day.
Oh, me too.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this has been so fun. Thank you.
That was Ian Knauer, chef, writer, and farmer, author of The Farm: Rustic Recipes for a Year of Incredible Food. We've been talking about in-season produce.